Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del challenges the status quo, questions everything, and empowers you to return to your core beliefs to make your life better. If you're ready to hear the truth and get your roadmap to the lifestyle you really want, the next hour will change your life. And now, your host, self-made millionaire, national award-winning investor of the year, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Well, my friends, we have a treat for you today. This is a special guest here on Tell Del Tuesday. This is a special guest that's been on many times before and probably be on many times again in the future. But his story is so impressive that it just deserves coming back on multiple times. So let's give you a few accolades. This gentleman and his team, and he's very big about his team, have won multiple local awards from the Houston Apartment Association, state awards from the State of Texas Apartment Association, and multiple national awards. It's unbelievable. Most people are lucky enough to win one ever. He's won multiple of all three levels. Not only that, he started when he was very, very young, and he was the youngest guy at Lifestyles Unlimited to ever buy an apartment complex as a lead investor. He was the youngest Lifestyles member to ever become a millionaire. He was elected president of the Houston Apartment Association, became the youngest president of the Houston Apartment Association ever, only to beat out another Lifestyles member, Trey Stone, who had been that before. But he is still the president of the Houston Apartment Association. He's done countless acts of charity that are too many to bring up in the show. And he's lately been here in Houston during the pandemic, helping everybody try to get through it. Welcome to the show, Mr. John Boriak. John, welcome.
Thanks, Del. I'm excited to be here.
Your resume is getting too large to take the entire show. I didn't even go into the fact that you own five apartment complexes and hundreds of units and have made people millions of dollars. Hey, I squeaked it in anyway. So if you're wondering what I'm going to talk to you about today, John, I'm going to split this up into four different segments, and I want to get to four different things. The first thing I'd like you to talk about today is what we always talk about, because for people who are tuning in for the first time, to not hear your story about how you got started in this business would be a shame. So let's go ahead and take the first segment and tell your story about when you were in high school and your dad coming to you and offering you the opportunity to look at entrepreneurship as opposed to going to college. Pick that one up for us.
Sure, we'll do. Yeah, if my story had a theme, it would be a lot of help from a lot of people. Starting when I still lived at home, I had awesome parents. And like you alluded to, when I graduated high school, my parents gave me the option or the alternative of this kind of standard American route of, you know, getting good grades and going to college and getting good grades there, graduating and getting a good job and working there until you're retired. They said, hey, let's try something different if you want to, and gave me the option of using those college savings to start a business instead. And I wasn't especially intrigued by studying, and so that sounded pretty interesting to me. And so we didn't have any, our family had no experience in real estate. My grandfather had started a steel business that my dad runs now to this day. So we had some self-employment blood running through my veins, but not anything to do with real estate. But we kind of set out really to find an industry for me to look into, and through a friend of a friend found Lifestyles, and that kind of gave us the baseline, you know, education you need that really skipped, I would say, 10 years of hard knocks education if we didn't have that group and that education that Lifestyles was able to provide. So we joined Lifestyles right out of when I graduated high school. I was, I guess, 18, 19 at the time, and pretty quickly realized this was a unique opportunity and something we wanted to take advantage of and would be a good fit. Actually, the day after we joined and went through the two-day class, like that Sunday night, I remember us finding a house. This was, again, 2007, so this is the middle of the subprime mortgage crisis. You could buy homes for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 at the time. And I remember finding a house that night and thinking, hey, I think this is a good one. And we fired it off to a realtor to make an offer. And I owned that house for many years. So I did 8 single family homes in that first year of membership, and then transitioned into a 50-unit apartment complex in a not so great area of the town that I took a little bit of a different route than a lot of Lifestyles members do, in that I chose to run it myself, being down there every day. And, you know, for the first, especially for the first few months, kind of being the manager in the office and handling a lot of the maintenance issues myself and learning the business from the inside out as I was, you know, 19, 20 years old at the time. After a while, we were able to hire some staff to run the day-to-day operations, but I was still pretty involved down there almost every day for quite a few years. Did end up getting a degree online during that time, so I would work in the apartments all day, go home, study at night, and got a management degree from Thomas Edison State University working at night. But during that time, it was really critical, looking back, it was really important to be able to go to every educational opportunity that Lifestyles had to offer, all the classes, all the road trips, and then have a property where I could turn around the next day, go implement the lessons and the practices that I learned from the members and the classes that were taught at Lifestyles. And so that really helped build my foundation of how to run a business, period, specifically an apartment complex. So that was from 2008 through 2012. And then in 2012, I did my first deal as a lead investor where I convinced 12 families to partner up, and we purchased a 200-unit apartment complex that has been very successful, and that was in 2012. And since then, have bought 5 more deals. So now I have 6 deals, total of about 1,522 units. I buy a deal every year and a half or 2 years or so. It's kind of my heartbeat. I like to buy one, get it stabilized, get it running well, put a bow on it, and then move on to the next one after that. And it's just been an incredible journey with so much help from so many people, everybody at Lifestyles and the Houston Apartment Association and plenty of other resources that have been more than generous with just incredible advice that have allowed me to get this far.
So how old were you when you bought that first one? Was that the Memorial property?
The first apartment I bought as a lead investor was Winfern Point. That was 2012, and so I'd have been 24 years old. I remember because it was a week before I got married.
Now, question. Does my memory serve me right? Because you hit one out of the park right out of the blocks. It sort of made you stand out here at Lifestyles. Seemed to me that first deal you made, your partner's like $3 million and your dad like $800,000 or something like that. Crazy. I know I might not have the number exactly right, but
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but you're in the ballpark. If anything, you might be a little low. I think now that deal is refinanced twice. The investors have probably gotten their money back 2 or 3 times, and if we were to sell today, they would get it back 2 or 3 times again.
Wow. Unbelievable. And, you know, when you hit one out of the park like that for your first deal, then you become famous, and being young, you stand out, and, you know, you took it all the way, so that was great. Was Memorial your second one then?
Yeah, Memorial's our second deal, which the first deal we bought was Winfern. It was more of what you would call kind of a yield play or maybe a hybrid where it didn't need a massive, massive renovation. It was already run pretty well, had some good staff. It just was in a little bit of a crisis situation from an ownership standpoint. They needed to sell, and so it was a good opportunity. The second deal was the Memorial deal you're referring to, and it was a very heavy value-add situation. We were losing money at first. We had to take it down to about 60% occupancy as we did a full-fledged renovation, taking many units down to the studs. And it has been another wildly successful deal where we returned 100% of the initial capital. It's been doing about 10% distributions ever since. And if we were to sell today, investors would probably get all their money back. And that, again, another 100%.
All right. So we're going to go to break here in a minute. And when we come back, I'm going to touch on 2 topics. I'm going to give you both topics because I think the topics end up merging in some way, shape, or form. And that is, you have a tremendous belief in people, and you have a tremendous spiritual belief, and those tie together very well in your business process, which you merge because you say you just about were getting ready to get married. That's a story in and of itself, how you met your wife, and she was related to real estate also in Lifestyles. So this is becoming your business, your philosophy. Throw in, you know, your contributions to society and some religious beliefs, the way you build your team, and how you believe business should be run. I don't know if you're getting what I mean about how that all ties together, but it's all about your moral setup and the way you do business. Can we pick that up when we come back?
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited about
that. Do you think that goes together? Can you kind of merge all those together? Because that's really about who you are in my mind. You're this person that's got this moral compass. It's unbelievable.
And that's been the secret to so much success is when you see your team as humans and people that build the business for you, and you work hand in hand with them, and in return give them.
All right, we got to go. We're going to go. We'll come back. We'll pick that up when we come back. We'll be right back with John Boryak and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
The other thing I think people hear landlord or property owner, and they think of Donald Trump and other multi-billionaires that own real estate, and that's not who the vast majority of owners across the nation are. The typical owner of a rental property owns just a couple properties, and they're people just like me and you.
You can own single-family houses and apartments, too. We'll show you how. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Join our national network of rental owners.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Today on Tell Del Tuesday is with me is Mr. John Boryak. John is the president of the Houston Apartment Association and multi-time winner of awards both locally and nationally. He's currently owns 6 apartment complexes, and he's the youngest apartment president, and he's also the youngest millionaire in this business. And when we went to break, I had keyed him up to come on this segment and talk about his business methods and how they tie into his business morality. John, pick it back up again.
Yeah, sure. It's really integral to everything. You know, when any business you start out in, and you know, the real estate business is no different, apartments, you start out and money is the end goal. Like, you've got to just make sure that bottom line is in the black and not the red. And it's tight, and you're squeezing everybody for every dollar. You're calling, you know, vendors and being, I'm not paying this $20 surcharge, you got to take this off. And you're seeing how little you can pay employees, and you're seeing how much you can squeeze out of your residents for rent and customers for rent, things like that. And it's not, that's not wrong necessarily. You're in survival mode at the beginning, especially. But as you do that, you go through, you realize in that way of thinking, money and profit is the end goal. Like, you make it almost like your idol, that your everything, your business is focused around maximizing that idol of money at the end of the game. And then as you grow and you mature in the business a little bit, you realize money's a bad god. Like, money is not the end all. It's an empty. It doesn't satisfy, and it doesn't provide that long-term benefit that we really want and need and look for. And so a few years into my business, I think I probably had, I don't know, 2 or 3 properties at the time. I sat down with kind of our leadership team at the time, and we really went through that grueling process that most mature businesses go through at some point, where you define your why. Why are we here? Why are we doing what we do? What's our mission? What's our vision? What's our reason for getting up in the morning and doing this every day? And in doing that, that's how you generate a mission statement and a vision statement and goals. And those things that are on every company's website that no customers care about, nobody really cares about, it all sounds the same. Unless you go through the process of being the one that writes out, you pick exactly which words you use and exactly, define your why of why you're doing this every day. And then that bleeds into a whole new worldview and way of thinking about business that prioritizes, or at least for us, prioritize people and your team members and providing a quality home for residents who are going to be there the majority of their life. These are people made in God's image, and they're spending their life in your home having Christmas and family dinners and raising babies. And this is where the good times and the bad times go down, and you can find a lot of fulfillment and importance in providing that quality product. And so as you realize that money is an empty goal, and you redefine why you're there, several years in, you know, that really helps to accelerate your growth in a healthy way. And so after that, we realized that we needed to reprioritize our end goal in with the relationships with our vendors and our team members and our residents. And that really transition us into what I'm going to call this kind of new phase of trying to make sure our team members feel cared for and have more than just a job. They have a purpose. And you can call it, you know, a good thing or a bad thing, but the world is moving this direction. The employment world is moving this direction where, you know, there's books like The E-Myth by, I think Michael Gerber wrote that, which is a great book, and I recommend it to every business owner. It talks about establishing systems and repetitive processes and predictable outcomes and building this machine where you can plug and play people to consistently produce this this product for your customers, which is great, and you need to have that. But a lot of times what that mindset or philosophy can develop into is seeing employees as just pieces of a machine, and they clock in, you pay them X, and they crank out X. And it becomes this transactional-based philosophy. And the world is moving just in the last few years to where team members, employees want more than that. They're leaving those jobs to go to jobs that offer more flexibility, that offer more purpose, where they feel cared for as an individual and as a person, and they're given that extra level of care and just being known and being treated as a human rather than a part of a machine. And that's becoming so important these days. And I think really prioritizing that and going above and beyond to, right, just even it can be, doesn't have to be expensive things. We do things like making, you know, giving our teams days off to go, you know, take all the ladies to the spa, take guys out on offshore fishing trips, you know, give them experiences at restaurants and things they've never had before. That's great. But it can be little things like just showing up on site and writing people cards and asking about their kids. And, oh, man, you had a quinceañera for your daughter coming up. Can I come to that? I want to see what that's like. Little things like that that really mean a lot to people and then translate into incredible success for your business as people know what's expected of them, and they're going to perform, but they feel known and cared for. And it's a holistic mindset for the team members and the residents more than just like, you give me this amount of effort, I pay you this amount of money, and then we call it a deal. It's just gotten so much more than that. And that bleeds over into just how you view people in general. You're talking about the morality standpoint or the religious standpoint. I feel like everybody's made in God's image and everybody is deserving of care and love. And so when we can provide jobs that provide that purpose and that holistic care, it just provides an extra level of purpose and meaningfulness that's so important to me and my team, and that's how our whole culture has been developed. And it's just funny how the less I focus on that dollar amount, the bottom line, the less I have to focus on it. Because when you focus on the bigger picture, that takes care of itself.
So when you take that type of arrangement with people, and you know, I have a hard time at lifestyles, and you know my structure is pretty loose. I don't even call the people to work there my employees. I say, I got these people to work with me here. You know, I can't bring myself to call them employees. You're talking about those words, right? That word just doesn't sound right. It's for the people at Lifestyle. So I understand what you're saying. And I also understand what you're saying, that when you treat people that way, I don't have to worry about the bottom line. I just have to make sure that my customers get taken care of. And the bottom line takes care of itself. So those are good points. Now let's go one step further. We had a pandemic, and people who didn't have that kind of environment got wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And people who did, we survived. I mean, Lifestyles did not even go down $1 in sales during the pandemic. In fact, probably did better. And we completely changed everything we did from live to all online. You, same thing. You took over as president, had to take everything online. You had to go out there and help all these people change. But some people didn't have that kind of arrangement that you had with your client, with your people. But with your people, you found you could do all these things. They cared enough because you cared to them. They cared enough to go out and help your customer, the people living in your apartments.
Yeah, I like to say, the pandemic really highlighted both with
pick this up on the break. John, on the other side. They're taking us out right now. We'll be right back with John Boriak and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Walmsley on the economy and politics.
What happens if the economy turns around and goes back down now the Democrats are in power, or inflation becomes rampant and all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to do business? I was listening to an economist the other day, and he pulled out this chart of GDP. He said, look, here's what I want you to do. He said, tell me anywhere from 1950 to 2021 where the Democrats took power and where the Republicans took power. He said, point it out for me. And the truth of the matter is, you can't tell.
If you're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, or waiting to see what the economy's going to do, if you're trying to predict the future, stop. Politicians and the economy have no bearing on your success or failure. Only you do. Register for the next live online free workshop. We'll unfold the map to retirement in 5 years or less, regardless of what's going on in the world. It's the same proven strategies we've been using for 30 years through every political party and economic cycle you can think of. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del is John Boryak. John is the president of the Houston Apartment Association, along with the operator and owner of 6 apartment complexes, and the youngest president and the youngest winner of the National Apartment Association and many, many, many more awards. John, let's pick it back up as we were talking here. We went to break about how only certain people survived the pandemic well in the apartment industry and others really struggled. You want to pick that up and tell me what you know about it being the president? You're out there. You're in the middle of it all.
Yeah, for sure. And for anybody who thinks this is like a pre-scripted or a choreographed show, it is not. I haven't talked to Del in a couple months, so you're getting the raw, unfiltered answer to all these questions going on here. But yeah, like you said, I was as president of the Apartment Association this year and president-elect last year. We got to kind of be on the front lines of our industry navigating the pandemic, and it really uncovered a couple things or just demonstrated a couple things. You know, stressful times like a pandemic, but any kind of stress, uncover people's true values and the preparation that they put in to a situation like that in their relationships and their business. And so I think we put in a lot of work into building those relationships with our team members and our care for our residents. And that those efforts for the last decade have really paid off this year or 2 years in the pandemic when we saw those relationships stand strong through that stressful time. Everybody talks a lot about how terrible resident turnover is in an apartment community, and it is. That'll hurt. The number one kind of cash flow killer is resident turnover. You got to get people to renew your leases. You don't make a dime off a resident until they renew their lease. That first year is just recouping turn costs. But what people don't talk about enough, I think, is how detrimental team member turnover is and how employee turnover. I would say that's 10 or even 100 times more important than your resident turnover, because when you have a one of your team members, your integral people turnover, you get somebody else in there. First off, that spot probably sits vacant for a few months, which is detrimental. And then you get somebody else in there who doesn't have the pre-existing relationships, doesn't know the system. They've got to get trained. They've got to get brought up to speed. And it is a huge downward tug on your productivity and your profitability. And it when the residents see that turnover of a new person in the office every few months, they feel like a machine is in place. They don't feel that community that you really want to build. And so the pandemic really demonstrated the importance of those relationships and that holistic mindset when you think about providing jobs to people. Because we had what people have called the Great Resignation, people leaving jobs left and right if they were even slightly unhappy, because there's a plethora of jobs out there as the economy has come roaring back. Versus there's other companies who I think have their values a little more aligned, and we're blessed to be one of them, that we had relatively low delinquency, pretty low unpaid rent throughout the pandemic. We had our times when it was like, ooh, this is getting a little scary, but by and large, we fared much better than a lot of other companies and a lot of other properties. We had relatively low employee or team member turnover during that time. We had a few people leave, absolutely, plus a couple of them we needed to. But by and large, our team stuck with us through that storm, and we've now been able to come back swinging this year as the industry and the economy has come back. And over the summer, we had a point where every single property hit 100% physical occupancy. I have 1,522 units, and every single one of them had a person in it leasing and occupied. I had nothing available across the city. And so we've been able to just raise rents to keep up with that, and we've come back swinging. We're easily at pre-pandemic levels of profits and business generation and doing team member events and things like that. And so the work you put in on the front end before the crisis hits to building those relationships and building up that team spirit and that family atmosphere really pays off when crisis does hit. That's like the testing ground for what you've been doing in preparation for that.
So, John, you brought up another point a while back. You gave just a little talk about social interaction and political interaction. And without going into a long diatribe, because I'm just going to give you the last 6 minutes of this segment, how important do you think it is to be involved in your city, your state, your apartment association, all the groups that you belong to and all the different political things that you attach yourself to? How important is that?
I think it's crucial. When you have something like the winter storm hit this year, or the COVID last year, we're still doing that this year, it was invaluable to me to have a group that I was a part of through the Houston Apartment Association of executives and vice presidents of large management companies. And we would get on these weekly or sometimes biweekly Zoom calls, during the winter storm or during the pandemic, and be like, oh my goodness, how are we handling this? All our pipes busted. Where are you finding parts? We've got delinquency through the roof. The courts are closed. How are you managing people that don't pay? And being able to just be a sounding board for these people and have these people be more than anything, be a sounding board for me. And we're talking about people that manage tens and tens of thousands and thousands of units and way smarter and more advanced than I am. And so to be on the front lines of our industry developing a response to these crises was invaluable, and it really put our company in a position, an advantageous position, to navigate the crazy storms as the waves came and know, ooh, we got to implement that, ooh, we got to implement here, apply for this program, stay away from that program. And it really helped us come through as not unscathed, but as unscathed as possible, given everything else. I can't imagine trying to navigate the sea of rental assistance programs that popped up over the last year on an island without that kind of network to be able to advise and vet and help craft. I mean, have the rental assistance program in the city of Houston, which was a partnership between the city and the county. I was on the very initial brainchild phone call where that program got birthed, and we were able to work with the city and be like, hey, be sure you implement this piece and don't do this thing and craft it this way. And it turned that into a successful program that got tens of millions of dollars distributed to residents that needed it throughout the city and became a model for the rest of the nation. And so to be on the front lines of knowing the pros and the cons of each different kind of program that you could participate in or you couldn't, or knowing which courts are open, which courts are closed, all that was super important. And it just highlights the necessity of a peer group and a network in any business, but especially the multifamily one, when you're trying to navigate these storms. I can't imagine trying to go through that on our own and just trying to figure it out.
So when you look at this right now, I'm trying to see how much time we have left. I guess we have 3 minutes left, so I'm kind of back into this. The next thing I'm going to ask you when we come back with the next segment is, where do you go with all this? Now, I'm going to put a little interlude into this before I give it to you, and that is, I'm sitting here at 65 years of age, and I've made it. I've got everything I've ever wanted, plus more by 10. And I found, though, that every single year since I started in 1990, I've made more money, and my companies of multiple types have grown, my business have grown, my investments have grown. And it's almost like it's on auto drive. It doesn't happen. So when we come back, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to articulate for us the balance process of how you rationalize it in your mind, how you articulate it to your wife, how you articulate it to maybe your employees or at least to your friends, of where you're going in life. Because if you keep working as hard as you're working now, and you keep buying one apartment a year, and by the time you get to be my age, you'll be a billionaire, because I know what I'm worth. And you're so far ahead of me that I can tell you that the trajectory is a billionaire. Doesn't that go against your belief systems, that a rich man can't get through the keyhole into heaven type of thing? And I'm just saying that with tongue in cheek, because I know that's not true. But you understand what I'm saying? I want to get you to be able to articulate for us, how does one that has as much common sense as you do, that's as down to earth as you are, who is as religiously connected as you are, who believes in people as much as you do, how do you slice out the ability to plan for the future and not make it, in your mind, be egotistical? Because you're going to be a billionaire. At the rate you're going right now, there's no doubt in my mind, unless you just shut it down and go, I'm done. And I tried that, John. I tried it when I was 40. I tried to quit. I'm not going to do anything more. Tried it when I was 50. Tried it when I was 60. So when we come back, I want to hear your explanation on that. We'll be right back with John Boriak and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Everyone is asking, is it still a good time to invest in real estate?
We see no indication that for the foreseeable future, and even the unforeseeable future, no indication whatsoever that real estate is suddenly not going to be the best vehicle for creating wealth and passive income for your family. And so that would say that now is the time to get in. And we very rarely talk about this because we talk about cash flow. But now we're talking a little bit about capital gains and what the future brings in that property. Because it's real. At the end of the day, you have all your cash flow, but you've got this nice capital gain when you sell. And the inflation that we see and the reasons for it are going to continue. And we're going to see great capital gains at the end of the line when we sell these properties.
Get in on the next free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back. Now here's some more unconventional wisdom to set you free from the man on a mission to retire America, one person at a time, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is John Boriak. John is the current president of the Houston Apartment Association. He's the youngest president of the Houston Apartment Association. He's also owner of six apartment complexes, and he's very, very successful financially, even at a very, very young age. So as we went to break, I asked him to please think about how his future was going to be shaped, because John, obviously, like I said, the trajectory you're on at such a young age is going to put you so far ahead of where I'm at that you're going to be a billionaire, dude. And it's the only thing you can end up being unless you just shut it down. What are your thoughts? How do you look at your future? How do you see it?
Yeah, it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. It's really a heavy responsibility when you think about it. I see myself as a steward of anything that the Lord has determined to give me, whether that be money, your family, people, business, anything else. And so the question becomes, how do I steward the resources and the gifts and the blessings that the Lord has given me in a way that would honor him and make him proud? And so one of my favorite sayings of yours that I remember from the two-day class 12 years ago is that bigger is not better, better is better. And so it's not about size. It's not about number of units. It's not about any. If you make that the end goal, you're going to take shortcuts and not build the right way. And so for so many people, money becomes the end goal. They want this specific house in this neighborhood. They want to drive this car. They want to be able to go on this vacation. They want to, you know, have this boat or whatever. And that's the end goal. And when I think about that, I'm like, man, how sad that is as big as you want to dream. Like, that's so empty of an end result in the grand scheme of things. It's so important to kind of refocus and rethink about what the end goal is for you. You know, money, as you get more of it, makes you just more of what you already are. It is just makes you a bigger version of who you are on the inside, and it allows you to express that in a larger capacity. And so it's so important to work on you and what you value and what's under the surface before money comes into play. So over the years, I've sought a lot of mentoring from people who are a lot smarter than I am. I'm looking at doing some executive coaching to help kind of redefine really what I want and who I am. I'm doing that soul searching. And kind of like I talked about what you do for a business after a couple of years of just finding your why are we in business? You do that for yourself and you develop your own kind of personal purpose and what your goals are and what kind of legacy you want to leave. And so for me and my family, as I've gone through that process with my wife, we're focused on just slow, controlled quality growth. We want to hit fewer home runs rather than a whole bunch of base hits. And then the end goal is nearly what I would define as kind of seeing God's kingdom come here on earth. And so that to us, that is alleviating suffering worldwide. The Bible talks a lot about focusing on widows and orphans, which in that time was people who were defenseless and victims that couldn't defend themselves. We seek out, you know, ministries to support the things on like human trafficking and the exploitation of women worldwide. We want to pour our resources into that. And then more locally here with our business as we grow, again, it's not about size or number of units. It's about the quality of the jobs we're able to provide and the homes we're able to provide and the return on investment we'll be able to provide to investors. And so we have a vision of, as we, you know, we get larger, and of expanding the services we provide, the benefit that we provide to residents, from just a home to live in to a more holistic view where you can live in our community and then there are opportunities for your financial growth. Maybe for a lot of residents, that just means opening a bank account and starting maybe, here's how you save, going through, you know, a lot of people need to see a Dave Ramsey course of how to just manage their personal finances. Maybe we introduce that. After school tutoring for kids that aren't clicking in school for them. Well, maybe we got a lot of club rooms that are sitting vacant a lot of time at these properties. Maybe those could be repurposed for some free after school tutoring for the residents there who need it. There's health benefits we could provide of doctors' clinics that come on site and look at help people out or provide teledoc services, something like that. So taking a more, I see our business growing into more than just providing housing, into more providing a holistic care for residents that, yes, housing is a cornerstone of a family's health and success and the trajectory of that family for generations to come. But what if you could also upgrade people's education levels and their literacy levels and their health and provide that level of service to people? That's kind of the long-term trajectory where we're headed, I hope and dream as a company. And then, my family personally worldwide is just seeing how many people we can impact during our very short time we have here on Earth.
Well, I think you've said pretty well, and obviously you've thought it through. How many kids you got now?
I got 3 kids, a 7-year-old girl, 4-year-old boy, and a 2-year-old girl, and they are my world right now.
Are you getting the time to spend with them while they're young?
It's been a hard year in that regard with being the president of the apartment association. I've tried to prioritize it as best I can, but we have big plans next year. I've said no to a lot of commitments for next year to be able to take advantage of this time when they're young and they want to hang out with me and they love me as much as I love them, and we're going to make that a huge priority next year.
Well, that's great. Next year's their year. And I know you've very busy with the being the president during the COVID situation. It was difficult. And I guess everybody out here wants to thank you for doing that, for giving back during that tough times and helping everybody that you helped along the way. And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story multiple times.
Yeah, absolutely. The roots of everything I have came from Lifestyles, and I'll never forget that, and want to make sure that I always keep passing it down the line. And all the volunteer stuff at the Apartment Association, that was a lot of work, but I've gained far more than I gave through the connections and the personal growth and just being able to solve problems and navigate crises with people who are far smarter than I am is very rewarding.
You know, it's there's an old saying, if you point one finger in your hand, 3 fingers point back. I think that's the way giving works, John. You give one amount and you get 3 times back. I agree with you. It really does pay for itself. Thank you for being on the show. Thank you for all that you do. And congratulations on all of your success, and keep doing it. We look forward to seeing you again sometime. For the rest of you out there, remember
this. Thank you, Dale.
John and I, we don't do it for money. We're doing it for the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, teaching you the opposite of everything you've been taught, so you can obtain the results you've never obtained. Join us 7 days a week. Can't get enough? Visit DellOnTheRadio.com to listen to the Del Wamsley Radio Show, access past show podcasts, and join the conversation.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.